Welcome back to WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. I've got the bow tie going on here on our YouTube channel. We're at the Beaumont. We're celebrating the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, but also 30 years of me blabbing. Don Mulder was a part of the original sports huddle with Tom Kapp and Dave Muir back in 1992. I went on the air December 13th of 1991 with Kenny Albert.
Wow.
And now, all these years later, I'm getting steaks at the Beaumont. We're in Catonsville. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. I got masks. I got scratch-off tickets. We're going to be at Costas on Wednesday giving away some scratch-off tickets from the Maryland Lottery and celebrating 30 years of East Side fun. Don, I put you on in charge of all things production here. And I said, Don, invite some old friends, some new friends. I have a mystery guest coming on the next segment.
Uh-oh.
I don't even know who's coming.
I'm waiting.
But, you know, I love when hospital people come on. You know, my wife is a two-time leukemia survivor.
Oh my God.
At Johns Hopkins. Spent 155 nights in the hospital.
Oh.
I spent a large period of that time amongst everyone. You know,
yeah.
She was pretty incapacitated, and I was there experiencing hospital life, something that I had never really done before, right?
Yep.
So I appreciate you coming by. Don, make the honors. Go ahead, please.
We are delighted to welcome Ed Laverne, President and CEO. I call it St. Agnes Hospital / Ascension. Tell me exactly how to say it so I get it right.
We're trying to change it now, so it's Ascension St. Agnes.
Ascension St.
Yeah.
Agnes.
So some consistency across the country with all the hospitals they've got. And so we're doing some changing to the branding. But most people know us by St. Agnes. And
you're,
and
you're the new
that.
Guy in town.
Not so new anymore. It's been almost 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah.
I was going to say July of 2020.
Yeah. It's gone by.
Come in the middle of a plague, right?
You know, I think.
Did they let you in your own hospital? Did you have a mask? Literally.
No. Yeah, we all wear masks. We all go through the little check-in every day when we come in, make sure to attest the fact that we're symptom-free every day when we come in. And, you know, I thank the security guards when they hold VIPs and others at bay to kind of not let them in because they check everybody. You know, we've got to have it be consistent for everybody coming in the door. You know, a lot of expectations from the feds and others that we do it consistently for everybody, but it's been tough. It's been a long
tough enough
months.
That your hand's all banged.
Yeah, what
up?
Happened here, man?
Yeah.
I got the CEO of a hospital here in a sling.
And he's right. Yeah. Looks like, I said it's the John Elway injury, right?
It is. Well, it's not an injury. It's called Dupuytren's contracture, and so it's kind of when almost a cord kind of starts wrapping around one of the tendons in your hand and bringing your fingers together. So I've had it for about 10 years. It's supposedly hereditary, although nobody in my family has ever seen it before. So I'm not sure. I may have come from a different family than I knew of. But it's treatable. You know, you can end up, John Elway has the enzyme injections and I had surgery. So glad to have it done. I get this off in a week and excited to have the use of my right hand back.
Fantastic.
You're right-handed?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I don't. How do you eat peas with your left hand?
I don't. I can only eat hand food now.
That
yeah, so
it.
Hamburgers.
I tell a story
something.
About how I went over to Asia and they gave me toothpicks to eat my food with.
Yeah.
I'm missing a finger.
Uh-huh.
So I couldn't have. I've had to learn how to eat chopsticks with my right hand, which I thought was impossible.
And you can do it?
Yes, I can eat. Yes, I've learned over the last 10 years. I'm very good at it. I take, of all the things I've take great pride in, is it eating with my left hand would be a really, really...
Yeah, try soup, try, you know.
Oh,
it's,
my. I think that would be impossible. I wouldn't be able to enjoy the food here at the Beaumont.
Well, a couple weeks.
I'd never get
it
in my mouth.
Yeah. We'll get you on the mat. You know, Ed, one of the things that Nestor's become known for is he asked this question. You didn't have to come to Ascension St. Agnes. You were a happy guy running a very successful hospital down in Atlanta.
Correct.
And Nestor always likes to know, you know, we were born here. We didn't have a choice. We love this
you
place
immigrated.
Like we love him.
Yeah.
Like you chose to come here. What was it about the St. Agnes opportunity? Because St. Agnes, to those of us in Southwest Baltimore County, Councilman Quirk and others, I mean, it's been a fixture in our lives for decades. But what was it that attracted you to St. Agnes?
Well, I'll start with Baltimore first. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a complex that people in Baltimore have. I was thrilled to come back to Baltimore. So my wife is from Towson. She went to Mercy High School. We had been dating since college. So I'd been coming up here for years. And I'd rather be here than anywhere in the country. I love being – I was born in Lynchburg, or I lived in Lynchburg, Virginia, graduated from high school there, went to college in Virginia. And
you're a Randolph-Macon guy,
from Randolph-Macon.
Right?
I love being back in the Mid-Atlantic area, and Baltimore is just the coolest city. You know, it's a thrill to be back. St. Agnes, one of the reasons was Bonnie Phipps. So Bonnie Phipps was the CEO at Ascension St. Agnes, you know, probably from about 2005 to about 2013. And I knew Bonnie from Atlanta. She had been a CEO down there. We were on some committees. And when I was aware of the opportunity up here, I talked to her. And, of course, she's an incredible woman and built a great organization there. And the thing about Ascension St. Agnes is it's a strong, vibrant organization with an incredible history, incredible medical staff. You know, you run into a lot of people at Ascension St. Agnes whose dads were doctors there. Dr. Jeffrey Middleton. Met Jeffrey Middleton. He's a dermatologist. But so I just met him for the first time the other day. He's on the verge of retiring. His dad was the chief of surgery there. So mm-hmm. as a kid, after Mass, he'd come down when he was 8 years old and do rounds with his dad. You run into those stories a lot.
He remembers what the hospital used to look like.
Oh, my God. And he knows. And I went to a woman today, Patty, down in the lab, who's retiring after 47 years. So started working there in, 1975, I guess. And as a 16-year-old out of high school, working in dietary, then works in the lab. So it has that tradition, that reputation. But the medical staff is phenomenal. And honestly, it was an organization that has, I think, some opportunity. It's as part of Ascension. Ascension is the largest Catholic health system in the country, and it's been around for about 20 years. And that, that goes through growing pains, right? You know, when you as it's gotten, as it's sort of figured out what it's supposed to do as a system, it's gotten to the point where it's starting to hit the sweet spot of knowing how to support the local hospitals in a good way, kind of getting out of their way, supporting them, having consistency. And so, I think the sky's the limit for Ascension St. Agnes. And so very excited to be here. Plus being at a faith-based organization. I was at a not-for-profit hospital in Atlanta, which was great. It was a secular organization. There's something special about being back in a faith-based organization.
Talk about that a little bit, Ed, because I've talked to others who have left faith-based organization hospitals for other opportunities. And it's interesting to hear you talk about it. They end up really missing that faith-based component. It's funny, we got a faith theme
Christmas
today.
Right?
It's
Christmas. There you go. Yeah. For the reason.
It is interesting, the theme.
Yeah. Well, I can get into that because I always think of it as a business, right? When I talk to hospital people, and I had a hospital procedure that was less than desirable.
Sure.
And the people at the hospital know about it, and I'm not taking it on the radio, but they know I don't bitch on the internet. I went to the CEO of the hospital and said I had a problem.
Good.
And, they're dealing with the best way they can, but mm-hmm. there's never a point where my wife, $2.5 million to keep my wife alive,
sure.
right? I mean, 155 nights in the hospital, and insurance, and having her be neutropenic and weigh 88 pounds and be mm-hmm. bald in a corner. Mm-hmm. And have a kid come up from food with a bouillon cube to nourish my wife when she was dying.
Yeah.
They sent a bouillon cube at Johns Hopkins. So I will mention them, but that's not where I went last week. I felt like as the person who was breathing and alive, I didn't have even a representative at the hospital. I feel like when you you buy a car, you have a salesperson and you have a rep.
Right.
You have somebody you can call at the dealership, right? At least Dennis does over at Coons. Mm-hmm. I really was my hospital experiences have been really chilly to me. And the doctors are faith-based in whatever faith they're in. Their faith is in keeping you alive, right?
Sure.
So they're in science and they're in that. The nurse is unbelievable. But down the line, there was a soullessness that I felt that, this is a business. They give you a logo on your shirt and they give you a to-go bag if you survive and they send you home, you know? And
let's ask it.
I would think faith-based. When I had my problem a couple of weeks ago and the CEO of the hospital, local hospital, and his representative who's mm-hmm. businessly inclined to make sure I'm not suing them.
Sure.
That's what it felt like to me.
Sure.
It felt like they were on the phone thinking I was going to be litigious mm-hmm. and calling Barry Glazer or something, mm-hmm. right? And that's not really what it was about. It was about I had a bad experience and I called them and they said to me, that doesn't sound like the kind of compassionate care that we believe you should have.
Right.
And I heard the word compassionate, right? And then I think faith-based compassionate, and I think compassion was for the doctors and the nurses in the hospital to keep my wife alive. The rest of it, there was nothing compassionate about it at all.
Yeah.
It felt as chilly as my PSL does with the Ravens.
Right.
It felt like a business transaction, you know? Yeah. Not a love, but a business transaction.
Yeah.
And you are a business, but then you talk faith-based. I would love to hear your philosophy on that part of it.
Yeah. I mean, our belief is that we're different. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I think the faith-based is part of it. I think being in a place like St. Agnes, which has such a connection to a place like Catonsville and to this area, and just generations that have worked there, that have gone there, that plays a big part, right? Because everybody knows each other. I mean, we were just talking about Dr. Billy Cook, right? And these guys all go to him. Billy Cook is one of the executives at the hospital. So those type of connections, I think, play a big part. It's nice to be medium-sized or small, unlike, you know, some of the bigger university hospitals. So I expect that, and we do a lot of focus on the fact that we want every employee to be able to pick up a problem that's happening and where somebody's not treated right, and expect that happens. But I also want, it's small enough that I can make sure that anybody I know, you know, I just met Tom, has got my business card, and my instructions are, if there's ever anything that happens, the sooner I know about it, the better, right? Because it's, you know, it's no fun when somebody's really had a problem and then you're sitting down to figure out what has to happen. And sometimes that does end in a lawsuit, you know, and you need to, then you go through that whole process. But you want to hear about it as soon as possible. And I think, though, you know, it's a business. It's not black and white, but I think
I
that the thing
more like a patient than a number.
Yeah,
right? Literally. Yeah,
but that's what I'm describing. I mean, I think the combination of being a faith-based organization, digging deeper, and again, that's you're still a business. You still have those challenges. You still got to make a bottom line. You still got to figure out how to stay in business. But you're every day, every meeting, you're thinking, you're praying, you're thinking about the reason that you're there. That doesn't fix everything, but it helps people have a different attitude. And then, again, when you're being in a community like this, I think creates a different dynamic. And then it just, because we are not who you mentioned earlier, I mean, and who has a worldwide reputation, and because we have
they
to
they kept her alive. I mean, you're like, I'm grateful.
Right.
But I would like to see the problems in the system be addressed, not,
right,
we're a hospital, our food sucks, what did you expect?
Right.
That's not what I expected.
Right.
That's really what I got at Hopkins,
right,
literally, from the top down. We're
right,
a hospital, the food here sucks.
Right.
She's dying of cancer, what do you mean the food sucks? Get some organic food up here.
Yeah.
You're running a cancer ward.
Right.
Literally, that's how I look at it.
Ed, give us a sense of you've talked about it a couple times,
uh-huh,
what it means. I can think it's small, mid-sized. Give us a sense of the size, the scope of St. Agnes.
Yeah, we're a 250-bed hospital with about 2,100 employees. So on any given day, we might have 200 people in the hospital there, which is considered a medium-sized hospital. Once it's above 500 beds, it's a bigger hospital. And, you know, those hospitals are important, and they offer sometimes a higher level of tertiary services like open heart surgery. We don't do open heart surgery. We'll do heart casts and things like that, and then when somebody needs to go to a higher level, we'll send them on. But what you're describing, we're able, when somebody needs to have a joint replacement, you know, which is a serious operation, but it's an operation most hospitals do, I'd argue you're better to come to a place like Ascension St. Agnes where we can take the time to take care of you. We can make sure that you're getting all the things that you need from a dietary standpoint. We know that our reputation is on the line in Catonsville every day with that. We know if you have a bad experience like you described, you're going to go back and start telling people. And that's happened in the past.
It's going to the pools. It's going
sure
to the churches.
Well, your place has such institutional knowledge, right?
Yeah, like but that's only through, I mean, you. The reality is, in order to be good at patient satisfaction, which is incredibly important to us, I mean, and we measure that to know how we're doing, you really have to get down to making sure, you know, it's nice to be nice and to kind of go upstairs and treat people well and have them have a good feeling. But we talk about literally what they do to make sure patients are always informed, if they have concerns, how those concerns are addressed. And we have to, it's kind of that, we have to be better. We're number two, so we try harder kind of concept. You know, we have to we have to be that good, and I think we are, and I think that's what I've come in to
that's
develop.
That's why you're still here.
Well, you were bragging a little bit. We talked a couple of weeks ago. I think people don't know this. Talk about the number of docs that were on Baltimore's best list. I mean, that's big feather in the...
That's huge. Yeah, we had 90 of our physicians on our medical staff were recognized as top docs by Baltimore Magazine, which, for our size hospital, is incredible. And, you know, there's a lot... those doctors are picked through word of mouth and through all that kind of stuff, but it shows that those are respected doctors who have great quality reputations. And I was really blown away by the quality of the medical staff when I came to Ascension St. Agnes. And so my job has been really to make sure that we involve the physicians a lot more in how we run the hospital. I mean, so we want to run the hospital the way a physician wants their hospital run. Those are the guys that have worked there for 40 years who are inheriting it from their dads or parents who handed it down. And we want it to be, you know, if we go to the primary care center where Dr. Cook works on Route 40.
I know it well.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. And you know, the success of that, and it hit me the second I walked in the door when I was new here, the success of that is that Dr. Cook and Dr. Ken Williams, they designed the whole thing from top to bottom. They said, okay, we've been in practice for 30 years. We want to design a place where patients are treated really well. Doctors did. Not administrators, not designers, not, you know, business people, but going to the doctors.
Well, doctors are the ones touching the patient.
Yeah, and they know, it's better if a patient has this after they have their appointment or if they're waiting here or whatever. And we're building a new 60,000 square foot facility in Columbia Gateway.
I wanted you to talk about that. Yeah, we're excited about that.
Thanks. We're excited about it too. And we've had a lot of smaller practices in Howard County that a lot of them have really been constrained and not able to grow. So by having this big facility in a convenient place where people can come, it's going to be able to let us grow a little bit in that marketplace and have a lot of the things you have at Route 40, the primary care, specialty imaging, lab services, a lot of the basic stuff that, you know, it's not a hospital, but if you're going to see your doctor, that's where you go and have follow-up. And the same thing, we're turning to Billy and Ken Williams and saying, you guys, it's your vision to make this come alive. And I think that's the secret, is you get the doctors involved and have them feel... And have them really be partners in how you run the thing, and that's what we're doing.
They'll take ownership. They are ownership, literally.
Yeah. Right?
They are, and I mean, it's interesting. You know, it used to be literally they're not, in that they don't really own the hospital, right?
But their hearts do.
And historically, they were all community physicians, so they all were not employed. You know, they had their practice, and they sent patients to the hospital. And now, more and more, we employ the doctors. That's true of any hospital. It's just what started to happen is hospitals employ the doctors, so it's a little bit different model. But you really, you want to capture what they're feeling in terms of that, as you described it, that sense of ownership that they've had through the years. You want that to be what's motivating them versus just getting a paycheck.
Ed Laverne's here. We're at the Beaumont. We're celebrating the Maryland Crab Cake Tour 30 years of sports radio and community conversations and CEOs from hospitals. I would say St. Agnes because that just rolls off the tongue, right? I have to add the
Ascension St. Agnes.
I have to ascend during the holidays.
Ascension St. Agnes.
Yeah. If you've been calling it St. Agnes for your whole life, you call it St. Agnes.
You still call it Father.
Yeah. Ed, I'm new, so I have to call it Ascension St. Agnes. Yeah.
Ed, what have we learned trying to deliver health care in a pandemic that may be with us and I don't know if I call it an unintended consequence, but what have we had to do during a pandemic that we said, you know what, we may keep doing that?
Oh, yeah, good question. There's things like telemedicine, which is obviously always, you know, was sort of a good idea that people had, and, you know, technically you could do it, but nobody did it. And then, you know, the day after COVID hit, all of a sudden everybody went from
having... We'll never go back the other way.
Yeah,
right?
So now, you know, it's a convenient way to see your doctor.
I appreciated that, by the way. When I had my situation 2 months ago, it was the first time I did a post-op telemed, and I'm like, no car, no wait, no parking, no nonsense.
Yeah.
Boom, it's over in 15 minutes.
Right. I mean, and
doctors on time.
There's some specialties that will never go back. I mean, behavioral health, psychiatry is almost, you know, mostly online and telemedicine. So there's things like that. I think it's been an interesting process. We're starting to talk about that. And I did come in about 6 months into it. And the reality was here in Maryland, it had sort of hit the highest point that it's hit so far, the most people in the hospital who were sick. The biggest challenges, I think, to the hospitals of figuring out protective equipment and just figuring out how to do things. So when I came in, it was, you know, 6 months into it, it was sort of people were used to doing it. I mean, it was that was life at that point. It now, as the surges come and go, and we're in the middle of another, so it's we've seen a doubling in our inpatients in the past, inpatients with COVID in the past couple of weeks.
You should all be worried about that.
It's happening. I was on a call this morning for the Maryland Hospital Association. It's happening across the state. And so
to we're vaccinated people.
More obviously to unvaccinated.
Largely unvaccinated.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the point is get vaccinated, right. Get your booster shot.
No doubt in your mind, right? I mean, there's no doubt in your mind that that's the key to getting ahead of this thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
do you have employees in your hospital unvaccinated?
So Maryland implemented something back at, I can't remember, September 1st, where they mandated that all hospital employees had to be vaccinated or they had to be tested once a week. And so we went to that, and then Ascension went to a mandate where they, November 12th, said, okay, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to be suspended. So now we're effectively, you know, probably 99% plus vaccinated. There's some people who have religious or medical exemptions where they don't have it. But even the religious exemptions were really pretty tight of what, you know, it's basically saying, hey, if you haven't claimed a religious exemption for a vaccine before, then there's some question about why you're claiming it now, right? So
all of a sudden, I found religion.
They read the internet,
right? Right.
They watched Joe Rogan, yeah, right. Changed their religion, yeah. About this, right?
Ed, are your people? We've talked to a number of healthcare workers over the past 18 months. Your people still exhausted? I mean,
yes.
I don't know that those of us, even though we think we do, fully understand. Put a face on what your folks have been through for us.
Yeah, it's. I mean, in some ways, it's hard because people take it in different ways. And I think the one thing that is positive about this whole pandemic is that people saw healthcare providers as heroes. People saw the bedside people, the nurses, the doctors as heroes, which was appropriate, and they are. And they managed to keep going. They just, you know, you go up on the floors where there are a lot of COVID patients and you still see people clad in, you know, all the protective equipment that they've got to wear in and out of rooms. And you're going in and out of rooms all day, putting that stuff on, taking that stuff off, putting it on. Having the exposure is obviously still a concern, although not as much of a concern now that people are vaccinated, you know, compared to what it was a year ago. It's been a huge challenge, I think, and we're seeing, you know, this great resignation that people talk about, where people are leaving the workforce. It's obviously happening in hospitals. One of the phenomenons that's happening now economically is that nurses and other healthcare providers can take short-term agency contracts and make three times what they make in a hospital, It got started because, I mean, there's always been agency nurses, but it's been
traveling nurses. That's
traveling
right.
Nurses,
sure, right.
But
yeah, sure.
But it was more of the exception. You know, it was more a radical choice for a nurse to make. To hey, I'm going to not work in a hospital, but I'm going to go travel around the country and I'm going to, you know, do that kind of work and I'm going to make a little bit more money. But what's happened is that by lots of people leaving the workforce, with demand in some markets being sky high and they needed them. That started this process where they can make three times more money. And now what's happening is they don't even have to leave home. I mean, so they can get agency jobs in this metropolitan area and not leave home.
See, Don, if I could have been a substitute teacher, and made that kind
there
of
you
job.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, literally,
yeah.
It's a little bit like that. It's
and you don't.
But that's also cultural. That's millennials, right? Don't want a gig. They it's the gig economy, right? Literally.
Yeah, but it's what's happened is, and you completely respect the nurses who were faced with this decision, is, you know, you're going along making $35 an hour, right? And, you know, apparently a pretty good salary, right, for making $35 an hour for a young single woman or man. And then you get the opportunity to make $100, $110 an hour.
Right.
So after a while, and somebody says, and you don't even have to, you can do it, you know, 20 miles away. And so you respect the fact that nurse is thinking, I'm going to stay PRN at my hospital here, but I'm going to go take that gig and get, I'm going to start put some money away for school, pay loans, all sorts of stuff. So you completely respect what the nurses are going through and taking that option. But all of a sudden for us, we're replacing that person with an agency nurse that we're paying three times as much for as we were paying before. So all of a sudden you talk about the cost of healthcare. So this is, it's really creating challenges of how we pay for stuff because labor's costing us three times what it cost before. So it'll settle out, but it's really tough right now. And then you've got all the dynamics of, you know, so then all of a sudden you got the nurses that stay around who are now working next to some new person who's there who's making three times as much as they are, and they're the nurse that stayed, you know, and so there's those dynamics, plus you're having new nurses come into the hospital who maybe haven't had the same type of training that you do for, you know, patient satisfaction or, you know, things that you do to try to make your hospital special. So all of those are big challenges that our industry's got to work out. You know,
I would go be a nurse and make all this money, but I know how hard it is.
It's incredibly hard.
It's unbelievable.
And create, really hard, what I hear you saying.
Yeah.
Really hard to create that sense of team that you find so important at St. Agnes.
It's more challenging. I mean, we find a lot of these agency nurses, again, who are just nurses. I mean, who are nurses from another place, so they're not. There's nothing different about them. They want to come in and be part of a team, and we're thrilled with that and want to embrace them when they come in. It's been a really different dynamic for hospitals to have to deal with. And you know, we need to figure out where the middle ground is. I mean, you know, we've got to be paying more money for nurses in order to keep them in there, but it's probably not three times as much as they were making before. So it's trying to find that middle ground.
That really does put a face on it. Listen, before we let you run, you're a busy man. We've asked everybody today, we're celebrating the holidays. It's peace on earth, goodwill to men. What are some favorite holiday memories for the Laverne family?
Oh, thanks for asking. So, you know, I'll go back to the beginning of the Laverne family. So I love Christmas. It's always such a great time to be able to be with your family, kind of time stands still. You're able to enjoy each other. And then the thing about healthcare is that you work on holidays, right? So, my first exposure to that was I was in graduate school. I was a superintendent at Medical College of Virginia down in Richmond, and I had to work on Christmas Day from 8 to 4. So it gave you real appreciation for what people do who work on holidays, right? I mean, it's a different level of service, of commitment. You're not at home with your family. You're getting in your car at 6 o'clock and heading down to the hospital. And that night was memorable. It was 1989. I came home. My wife or my girlfriend came down. I proposed Christmas night, 1989.
Well, there's a Christmas memory. There you go.
So
that's first class.
Yeah.
Working on 32 years.
And we are.
I do the math. I'm good at math.
Yeah.
I know how to do that.
That was excellent. But I always make a point of going into the hospital every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, because what they give is different. I mean, that's, you know, most people don't think about that. It's always like, my wife's a teacher, and, you know, when snow days happen, she's thrilled, and I'm like, you know, snow days are another day for hospitals. You got to get in, got to get everybody in there. And but that's people who work in hospitals are different, and they come in on Christmas. And usually when I come in to say, hey, thank you for being here, they're like, hey, this is just part of the job. This is what I do.
I got a Christmas miracle for you. So on December 23rd of 2015, I left the hospital pretty convinced my wife was going to die.
Mm.
And for most of December, I thought every day it got worse.
Yeah.
And I left that night, and it was a terrible night. I went home, had an awful experience on Christmas morning that I'll leave alone at this time. But I went back to the hospital, as I'd done every day. And I went in, and she said, I want to eat pizza. Christmas Eve.
Wow.
So I got pizza on Christmas Eve. I went over to the Popeyes, and they're not even a sponsor. Go to Rofo. And I got fried chicken on Christmas Eve. And we literally sat in her hospital room, and it was the time she got better. And she got out of the hospital on the 29th and has never been back in. Well, there was that one COVID thing 2 years ago. But other than that, she's good.
We've got a proposal. We got Christmas. We've got a proposal on Christmas Eve.
This is Christmas Eve.
We've got fried chicken and pizza. Can't have more peace and goodwill than that. Ed Laverne. Thanks, man. Good
Thank
luck,
you, Don.
Ascension St. Agnes.
Thank you, Esther.
Of St. Agnes, I'm allowed to say
Ascension
it.
Ascension St. Agnes. Yes.
I got a mystery guest over here.
Uh-oh.
Dundalk in the house. Future Dundalk Hall of Famer. Jimmy T is going to be here to wrap things up for our 30th anniversary. We're right here at the Beaumont. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. We're going to be at Costas. Why did you come to Costas next? Oh, that's right. He's over in Catonsville coaching ball. That's right. That's why I have him over here. We're neighborhood to neighbor. We're going to be in Dundalk next week and into the new year. Our first neighborhood stop will be at Nacho Mama's in Canton. I am Nestor. Don Moeller sticking with us. We're at the Beaumont in Catonsville. Come on out, get a steak, and enjoy the holidays. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. The sun is setting too early at the Beaumont.
It is.